and we're just on the beginning stage. Okay, so this will take us on, let's see, to page 8. Page 8. So on page 8, he is giving a little description. If you look at the second paragraph, beginning with the word first. So he's giving a little rundown of what's been going on. First of all, the devotee develops a little faith. It means to have some trust in Shastra. And it means that some desire is there to get a little involved in Krishna consciousness, something like that. That's the beginnings. Then, this faith leads one to take shelter of a spiritual master and associate with affectionate, like-minded devotees, associate with advanced devotees, in other words, sadhu sangha. And then, in association of devotees, one feels inspired, let me get into it myself and do it. So that means bhajana kriya, doing devotional service, taking it up. But now, a problem arises. The problem is that one has many bad habits from previously. Now one is trying to get into devotional service, but these bad habits will tend to upset your getting more and more into Krishna consciousness. They'll interfere. You won't just get into Krishna consciousness and that'll be that. But there are stumbling blocks on the way. So now he's going to discuss about stumbling blocks. And at this point he's going to discuss stumbling blocks which are related to such a devotee who's basically just beginning and just getting into it, not very advanced at all, but still they're trying to be devotees. So this is very relevant. Of course you're all very advanced devotees, but you at least may know someone who these stumbling blocks might refer to. And who knows, you might even face some yourselves, but I know that's very unlikely. But let us just discuss, what are these initial stumbling blocks? And he even says, let's see, it's about the fourth or fifth paragraph down. Next comes bhajana kriya. So, bhajana kriya. Oh, yeah, okay. I'll just do this one. Bhajana kriya is of two types, unsteady and steady. So steady actually means number 5, nishtha, actually. But anyway, it's been separated as a separate stage because it is quite distinct from bhajana kriya in the sense that you're just beginning devotional activity. So there, he says, unsteady performance of devotional activities, unsteady bhajana kriya, is of 6 types in sequential order. So there's a sense of one following the other, like that. It's not necessarily completely like that, but there tends to be a sense that as a person's getting into devotional service, first of all, they'll encounter this problem. And then secondly, they'll tend to encounter the next one. And then like this. It tends to be like that. And these are very interesting things. So, the next paragraph, you'll see, begins with the word utsaha, mayu. Right? So just mark next to that, number 1. That is number 1. And while we're at it, in the next paragraph, you see the word ganatarala at the beginning. Just put a number 2 by that. And the next paragraph, vyudhavikalpa, put a number 3 by that. And then there's quite an extensive discussion of vyudhavikalpa, and we'll come to number 4 when we come to it. But anyway, here we are with utsaha mayi. Now, utsaha means enthusiasm, actually. Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamrita, he says, utsaha nischayat daryat. You should be enthusiastic. This is a very good thing. So here we're talking about enthusiasm, but utsaha mayi. Mayi means maya, an illusory, false type of enthusiasm. And he gives the example like a child. A child starts his study, and after a few days he thinks he knows everything. He knows ABC, so he thinks he knows he can read Shakespeare or whatever, like that. So the idea is that when a person first takes to devotional service, they may very well have the tendency to feel they're more advanced than they are. And this is a problem. This is a problem. So he becomes utsahamai, or filled, puffed up with enthusiasm. A couple of little stories we have, you may have heard of them, to illustrate such a mentality. There's one story of Srila Prabhupada meeting one man in Bombay, and the man was telling Prabhupada that, "Swamiji, I am liking Bhagavad Gita too much." People don't say that here, but in India, Indian people, they express themselves like that. If they really like something, they say they like it too much. So, anyway, that's all right. But it's kind of amusing. "Oh, I like Bhagavad Gita too much. I'm liking Bhagavad Gita too much." And Prabhupada was appreciating. Then the man said, "Especially that part when Lord Krishna tells Arjuna at the end that now you've heard everything. So now you do whatever you like." "So that part, oh, I'm liking that too much." So that's a true story. And this is utsahamai, a false type of enthusiasm. That you think you know a lot more than you do. And you think you've got it all clear and you're doing well. But actually you're not. Then another story, which some of you will have heard, which I thought was a really good story, was in Amsterdam. Prabhupada went there first in 1972. There was actually a double garage in the red light district. And we went there on Padayatra in 1991. You have to close your eyes and sort of, because, you know, it's really a red light district. You may never have seen such a thing. And you're very fortunate. But it's bizarre. It's wild. And it was right in the middle there, double garage. And going back about two or three car lengths. In fact, it had been like a lubrication thing for a petrol station. So anyway, Prabhupada was there. And they were, I don't know if they're installing deities or it was initiation or what it was, but Prabhupada was going to do a fire sacrifice. So, and it was being televised live to Holland, all of Holland. So there they were, and the devotees were really messing things up. Building the fire, the Havan Kund or whatever, and trying to get it together, but they weren't getting it together. And Prabhupada was sitting there, getting more and more angry. In the end, they said, "All right, Prabhupada, we're ready." Prabhupada said, "Where's the fruit? Where's the fruit? Bring the fruit now." Because you're meant to decorate with fruit and vegetables. So that there was no fruit. So the temple president thought, "Wow, the fruit. Get the fruit now. Okay." He ran into their kitchen, which was, I don't know, just some little room on the side. He told the devotees, "Prabhupada wants the fruit. Where's the fruit?" So the devotees panicked. Right, fruit. They grabbed fruit. But then they thought, "Prabhupada doesn't eat whole fruit." So they made a fruit salad. So he just looked aside like this, and he was just going like that. So standing next to the Vyasa stand was one young hippie boy. Long hair, beard. But he was into Krishna consciousness a bit. He's in this stage with Sahamai. So there he was, you know, age. Watching it all going on, chanting on his beads, watching Prabhupada getting more and more angry. Then finally he sees Prabhupada is just too much, and Prabhupada just looks away. He just doesn't want to know any longer. So this boy He was watching Prabhupada right next to him. He leaned over and said, "Shuddha Prabhupada, just chant Hare Krishna." One is not meant to advise or instruct someone like Srila Prabhupada. But anyway, Prabhupada picked up his beads and started chanting. This is an example of Utsaha Mai. So, anyway, it's an interesting one. So, we may know someone who's a little bit like that. They tend to know everything. And we may sometimes feel that we also know more than we do. Then next, it tends to follow after, although not necessarily, but the idea is that it may be like the next step. I mean, not that it means that by the time you come to Ganatarala that you are done with pride. There's no more pride. That is extremely unlikely. But tends to be like the next thing to become prominent. So this means, as you see right at the end of the little description, condensed, diluted, thick, thin. In other words, the devotee getting into Krishna consciousness a little bit, not that much, but a little bit. And the devotee is thinking, wow, this Krishna consciousness is great. I'm going to get up at 2 in the morning and just chant. So he gets up at 2 in the morning and he's chanting and chanting and chanting. And he's thinking, wow, this is great, which is nice. But he's chanting up in, perhaps in the Brahmachari ashram, or in the Brahmacharini ashram if it's a lady, or like this. And so there's so many other devotees around, and they're hearing this chanting going on at 2 o'clock in the morning. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Very enthusiastic. So one sort of little bit heavy devotee gets up and says, "Hey you, stop chanting so loudly, what are you doing?" Gets on his case. And the poor devotee thinks, what is this? Oh my God. So next morning, he doesn't get up till 7 o'clock. And when he gets up, it's only wind prasadam maybe. So thick, thin, like that. Enthusiastic. Then some obstacle comes and, oh my God, what to do? Disaster. So we may be like that. Sometimes we're into it, something goes wrong, and then we think, oh gosh, Krishna consciousness. You know, maybe I have to chant my rounds, but like this. We may tend to be like that when we meet obstacles. Let's see. Then next is view of the culprit. It's a very interesting one. View of the culprit. In fact, he presents the idea of what view of the culprit is in the form of a conversation with himself. This neophyte devotee is now encountering the fact that he has material desire. And, of course, it could be any material desire. But in this particular case, the desire, the attraction to the opposite sex, which is not unusual. So he is encountering this. So he's wondering what to do. So the basic, if you follow the conversation, it's very interesting. Shall I just spend my life happily in family life, making my wife and children Krishna conscious and worshipping the Lord? Or should I give them all up and go to Vrindavan? Or live in the temple or something like that, but basically give them up and just get into Krishna consciousness. And perfect myself by hearing and chanting without being distracted. Or shall I wait until the last stage, after I've enjoyed pleasure, and I've finally understood that pleasure, material pleasure, is not really so good, and then I can renounce in a more natural way. So what should I do? Should I renounce right now? Maybe I should, because there are certain evidences, like the next verse. This is Srinath Bhagavatam, ladies, so please feel offended. Association with women is the way to death. I will help. And for women, association with men is the way to death. So women are not simply being singled out here, but it's a principle. So now he's thinking, maybe I should renounce. Or she may be thinking, maybe I should renounce, because the opposite sex, whichever one it happens to be, they are problematic. I get attached, I get caught up in material life. So maybe I should just renounce. And so then he goes on, over to the next page, discussing with himself. Maybe I should just give this all up. But, see, now he's viewed it means inability to make a decision. Flip-flop. Do this. Tomorrow, no, don't do it. Do the opposite. Next day, oh, I'll do it again. Following day, no, I won't do it again. So maybe I should just give up family life. Or on the other hand, is it proper to? Maybe I should wait till my parents have died. Alas. My parents are old. We should have a drama on this show. I guess I'm acting it out myself. My parents are old, and my wife has our baby in her arms. And without me, what are they going to do? And not only that, but if one gives up family life unsatisfied, if one hasn't really expressed one's material desires, then when I renounce, I may still think about family life or whatever material things I'm attracted to. And in this way, I may not be able to get into spiritual life. So if I die in that condition, I'll go to hell. That sort of renunciation is very bad, he goes on to say. But then he does another flip-flop to the other side, down about two-thirds of the way down. In whatever ashram the sannyasi stayed, they always gave him more than enough to eat. That's an interesting idea. Actually, it's true. I'm afraid to say. In the life of renunciation, there's no worry for maintenance. So therefore, I can renounce. Why do I need to worry about it so much? I can renounce. I'll be all right. So maybe I should renounce. But, on the other hand, they're going back again. Until people become your devotee, their material attachments remain thieves. But, household life is a prison only for those who are attached. So, he doesn't know what's going on. And some of us, we may also go through the same dilemma in this specific regard, because this is a very common one. Because everyone has attraction to the opposite sex. And this is an important question. It's not a joke, actually, in a sense. I mean, in the sense that it's a reality. When we look at a person going through these motions, it seems a little comical. But it's a very important question. Should I become a householder or not? Or remain a householder or not? What position should I take? It's an important question. And there are other questions, too. Should I, if you're living in a temple, should I do this service or that service? Should I stay in Durban or go to Vrindavan or Johannesburg or Cape Town or whatever? We are all faced with choices. It's not at all uncommon what to do in Krishna consciousness. So, Vyudhavikalpa, this tends to be the third type of dilemma. The neophyte devotee encounters. So, of course, how to overcome that one? One should take shelter, particularly of the spiritual master if one has one, or take shelter of the devotees, the older devotees, the authorities like that. Then one can get direction. So that takes us through page 9. Takes us on to page 10, and at the top of page 10 is number 4, Vishaya Sangara. Vishaya Sangara. It actually translates, so you can mark that number 4. You see that? Top of page 10. Literally it translates, Vishaya means sense gratification. Sangara means combat. So this is quite a dramatic term. war with Maya, declaring war on Maya, declaring war on sense gratification, fighting with Maya. So what does fighting with Maya mean? It means we have attachments, but in this case, the person is thinking, right, no more material attachments. Like, eat, sleep, mate, and defend. These are the fundamental material attachments. Eat, sleep, mate, defend. So this Vishaya Sangra means that the devotee who's getting into Krishna consciousness a little bit more now and is thinking, yes, it's very good, I must make advancement. So the spirit, good spirit, is building up. So then the devotee notices that, oh, I've got these attachments, but now I'm going to get rid of them. So from sleeping 8 hours a day, the devotee thinks, right, 4 hours a night, maximum. I'm declaring war on Maya. No more sleeping, at least just 4 hours. So there's the devotee now up at 2 in the morning, or 1 in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna. But there's a problem. Maya fights back. That's the root of the problem. And Maya is no mean enemy. Maya's pretty good enemy. So the devotee is now sitting in Srimad Bhagavatam class. But as soon as the first line of Jayarada Nadava is sung, the devotee is out. Like the light. We have seen such devotees. As soon as the devotee sits down anywhere, the devotee is out. Even when the devotee is up, the devotee is sort of fumbling around a bit. Because the devotee is not getting enough sleep. As soon as the devotee sits behind the wheel of a car, I remember driving along in England in the mid-70s once we were on Travelling Sankirtan. And there were 3 of us, 1 driving, 2 sitting next in the van. And the one in the middle was reading to the driver, Krishna consciousness. And just to make sure the devotee was awake, he would ask questions about what he just read. So I was reading, such and such, Krishna is this and that. And what was this point? Silence. So then he doesn't think too much. So he goes on reading Krishna consciousness is this, and what did I just say? Silence. So we both looked over, and there was the driver. But fortunately, his hands were like this on the wheel, so the vehicle was going straight. So then you wake them up, and they say, oh, I wasn't sleeping. So such things are going on. In a sense, it's nice because at least the devotee's trying. But the trying is not really in a balanced way. So the effect is not like there's no solid effect. Or the devotee is thinking, right, eating, big problem. So I'll only eat once a day, once every other day, and just a few mouthfuls. That's it. After a couple of days, the devotee is feeling very weak and fatigued and can't really do very much. And then the maha plate walks by. And the devotee thinks, well, Krishna consciousness is not meant to be just dry renunciation. And this prasad, this is Krishna. This is a form of the Lord. I'm renouncing the Lord. I can't do that. So immediately, kidnaps the money. So then it's 5 meals a day. Because it's all prasad. It's Krishna. You have to do it. Anyway. This is Vishaya Sangara. But as he says, in the first main paragraph, but many times his attempts at renunciation end in enjoying what he's trying to renounce. And then he quotes a nice verse from the Bhagavatam. Knowing that sense gratification leads to misery, which is certainly a fact, even though he tries to give up his material desires, still he's unable. And he ends up enjoying the same thing he wanted to renounce. So this type of problem is there. It's a little bit more advanced problem now. It's one thing to have problems, but you should try not to have the same problem all the time. At least have new problems. when you're in the lower stages, you can expect some problems. Don't think that tomorrow you're going to be an Uttamadikari, because it won't happen. Unless you are really someone very special. Or at least you make a very, very special effort. But generally we see that people go gradually through the process. This is 99% of the cases at least. So problems will be there, but we have to try to learn how to deal with them maturely. So this is a little bit more advanced problem. At least he wants to renounce. In Vyuddhavikalpa, he didn't know whether he should renounce or not. But now at least he knows that I should renounce, even though he can't really do it very nicely. So now the next one, if you go down about one third of the way down the page, you see the word Niyamakshama. So that's number 5. I hope you've got all the numbers so far. Niyamakshama. So Niyama. Niyama refers to rules. So now, the devotee, previously, the devotee was trying to renounce material things. Now the devotee wants to accept spiritual things, like chant more. So now, 64 rounds a day. 64 rounds a day. Obeisances to every devotee whenever I see them, for the whole day. And reading at least 3 or 4 hours. Something like this. The devotee is now taking vows. The previous vows in Vishaya Sangra were, I'm going to give up material things. But now the vows are, I'm going to accept extra Krishna conscious activity. And in this way make extra advancement. But the devotee finds, you know, the second day, first day maybe struggles up to 50 rounds. Next day is up to 32 and he's thinking, wow, how am I going to do this? And next day he thinks, well, Prabhupada said 16. Which is true, Prabhupada said 16. And actually we should generally stick with that. Unless we have some opportunity really to increase our minds. Like that. But the idea is that the devotee is trying to increase the devotional practices. Obeisances to every devotee. So the devotee is going up and down, up and down, up and down. And after a while your knees hurt. And your body aches. Whose car is this? Okay. So the devotee is actually taking on more devotional activity than he or she is really capable of doing comfortably in a way which is going to help. And devotional service becomes a strain. Becomes very difficult. But it's a little bit more advanced problem than just fighting with sense gratification. Then next paragraph, Tarangarangani is number 6. Riding the waves. Riding the waves. Oh, how nice. So now the devotee has got more into it. The devotee is a little steadily situated in Krishna consciousness. And other people are noticing, oh, this devotee's doing okay. And some real neophytes may think, oh, very nice devotee. And this neophyte devotee who's a little steady is noticing that these people think that I'm quite a good devotee. So he thinks, yes. True. Yes, they have understood. Just to give a very good example, like this example, a devotee, they may not even be on the stage, but they may or may not. Someone joins the temple, shaves their head,
puts on Dirty and Corte, and they've sort of got it on the right way.
The young lady wearing a sari, and she's sort of basically coming to grips with how it should be. And now she's going out on Sankirtan, door to door. Knock on the door. You've been a devotee for a month, perhaps, or something like that, living in the temple. Knock on the door, you're distributing books. Person opens the door, and they think, oh, the Swami has come.